Josh, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a list of the decade's best games.
Wait, Tom. Are you, like, quoting Back to the Future right now?
Yeah.
That, like, happened 30 years ago. Can you, like, at least quote something from, like, this decade? Yeah, I was just watching all the Star Wars movies in prep for Rise of Skywalker.
Yes, it is December 15th as of right now.
I don't understand how, like, everyone was, like, shocked when Darth Vader said that he was Luke's father. Like, you saw that, like, 3 movies ago.
Yeah, I mean, when the first Star Wars movie came out in 1999, it clearly laid the you know, all of the steps necessary to make the 5th movie's reveal totally logical, you know?
Yeah, like, well, because I'm just going back, I'm watching, you know, episode 1. I was like, okay, 2, okay, 3. Oh, wow, he had kids. Wow, that was pretty cool. 4. Okay, so this is going to be a movie about the kids. All right, 5. Well, yeah, I knew he was his kid, but, like, what? Oh, surprise. I don't understand why everyone was so worked up back in the 80s.
Yeah, it's almost like people don't like change or radical twists they couldn't see coming, you know?
Yeah.
Good thing that never happened within the Star Wars fandom again.
Yeah, that's true. And with that, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom. And I'm an embarrassed silly Tom right now, Josh.
Why are you embarrassed, Tom?
Oh, because this is the second time we've had to record this episode.
Yeah, it's all good. Technology, so, right? It's great all the time, but when it doesn't work, it's the worst thing ever.
You know, we've been doing this in one form or another for at least 2.5 years now. And 4 days ago, when we first recorded this episode, we talked for like an hour and a half. And then I get done and I find out that Audition only recorded the first 15 minutes of my end of the episode. And that's when I found out that you're supposed to clean out your media cache frequently. So I learned a valuable lesson. Apparently.
But, so, yes.
Yeah.
2010 to 2019.
Mm-hmm.
10 years of gaming goodness, question mark?
Just like the world around it, this decade in gaming was filled with a lot of confusion and anger and controversy. But amongst all that, there was some legitimate joy and excitement that gave us many great gaming moments, many great games at period, you know? So you gotta take the good with the bad, but we're here to talk about the good, I would say.
Yeah, we always talk about the good here on A Cast of the Past.
Except that one time we talked about The Force Unleashed 2.
Well, don't forget to get the complete version of that on the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, for real. The one time the Wii had an edge up on modern consoles.
So yeah, so what we're going to be doing is we're going to be picking 5 games from the past decade, what we believe our top 5 games are from the last decade, and just explaining, giving a little tidbits of why they stuck with us after all this time.
Yes. So Josh, just to clarify, let's ask each other. First, I would like to ask you, what in your opinion made your candidates worthy of being chosen? What were your criteria?
So my criteria was based off of games' impact. So what did it mean to the world? What did it mean to me? Is this a game that I can constantly keep going back and playing every day, every year, once a year, something along those lines? Or is it a game that stuck with me so hard that I don't want to go back to it because it left such an impression on my life? And that's how I came up with the top 5 of the decade. What about you, Tom? How'd you come up with your list?
Very similar criteria. You know, I thought about what they meant to this decade in terms of gaming history, you know, how when we talk about where games evolved, if these games played a part in that, my personal enjoyment and how much it impacted both like my life of gaming appreciation and, you know, the way I'm able to share gaming moments with friends or family, you know, like did a game really connect with me on that level? Overall, just a kind of like sense of like importance, you know, like is this a game that I would throw into a time capsule and say, play this when you dig this time capsule up to get a sense of, you know, what gaming was in this era and why that's a good thing, you know?
Yeah. And over the course of 10 years, a lot of games came out, strangely.
Yeah. It's almost like there's a whole industry just shoving games out every day.
Yeah, it's very weird, very weird. And we know that not all games have made our list or could make our list. So we have some honorable mentions right now. And I know I had a pretty decent amount more than you, Tom. But maybe, you know, over the past 4 days, you thought of something else that kind of came to mind.
Yes. So something that's going to be quite remarkable in this episode is the two of us pretending to be as shocked and or surprised by the choices we've already heard.
But maybe you might be shocked.
Oh, you've gone and swerved me, changed some things.
No, I'm talking about the listener and himself.
Yes, I do want you all to be shocked and delighted, of course.
Not Tom. I can't get anything past that, Tom.
So, here's what the rules are for talking about our honorable mentions. I have 6. Josh, how many do you have?
I think I had 14 the last time.
You can cut them down.
Yeah, I can cut them down.
Okay. Do you think you can make it 6 as well, or...
Yeah, I can make it six.
We each have 6 honorable mentions because we didn't want to do a top 11, but we didn't want to leave these out. And the rule is we're going to go back and forth, say what the honorable mention is, but then we can only recommend it in one sentence just to keep things moving. So with all that explained, Josh, would you like to go first?
No, Tom, I want you to go first.
Okay. Just in case, you know, my computer fails. Got to get mine in. So... My first honorable mention for Game of the Decade is Tomb Raider 2013, a series reboot, which I think is one of the best new perspectives that any series has ever gotten to be reintroduced through.
My first honorable mention, Doom 2016, the best reboot of a game franchise ever. And
I do remember this from 4 days ago, so we're still pretty on path, yeah. All right.
That's why I wanted you to go first.
I know, fuck. My second honorable mention is Undertale, an indie game that, despite its retro aesthetic, has some incredibly deep emotional paths that it takes you down, and it takes you on this journey through one of the best soundtracks ever made. And I'm going to call that a compound sentence because it was very long, so boom, it still counts.
Honorable mention number 2. Batman Arkham City. It improved on everything Arkham Asylum did and made it better.
And what more can you ask for from a sequel, you know?
Yeah.
All right. My next honorable mention comes with a very heavy asterisk next to it. It is Overwatch, a online shooter that I think kind of was a transforming moment in gaming culture. But at the same time, it has this shadow hanging over it because of how awful Activision/Blizzard were to the gaming community in the last year and a half of the decade.
Honorable mention number 3, The Messenger. Great retro style game with one of the funniest stories I've seen in a game in a very long time.
Oh, my first surprise. I'm pretty sure that wasn't there last
time. It wasn't there last time.
This is great. See, this is why we have such great chemistry, Josh, because you could still surprise me even after all these years. All right, my next honorable mention is one of the greatest, most significant Nintendo IPs to ever come out, and that is Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, a masterpiece taking Nintendo's greatest character and putting him in a charming and clever puzzle game.
Next one for me, Cuphead. It's the only game that I beat.
Wait, you beat Cuphead?
Yeah, you know, did you know I beat Cuphead?
I didn't.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling me.
Yeah, no, it's no problem. Yeah, I just like to let everybody know that I did beat Cuphead.
I'm sure it's something I will never forget.
And I also beat Cuphead 2. Well, not Cuphead 2. Cuphead 2 didn't come out. I'm still waiting for the DLC, but I beat Cuphead.
I'm sure that given that you and I travel across all areas of history for this podcast, you've already beaten it in one time frame.
Yeah.
You know, so it counts. Next is Splatoon, a game that I admire for how fast-paced and frantic it is, and also just how delightfully original it is. It's Nintendo's most sincere effort in a long time.
Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, one of the greatest performances in gaming history, and that trailer for Hellblade 2?
All right, and my final honorable mention of this decade is Dragon Quest XI Dragon Quest XI: Echoes of an Elusive Age Definitive Edition. The most fun I've had connecting with an RPG since Chrono Trigger.
And my final one, Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. A remake the way remakes should be.
I really like how both of our last ones ended up being, you know, kind of like definitive slash HD editions, you know? Like,
yeah. You just had a longer title than mine.
Ports count when they have extra love put into them, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
All right. So now how about the cream of the crop?
All right. Coming in at Josh's number 5, Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go was a phenomenon. And it still is. It's still going strong to this day. Still going out and about, watching people walk around town, spinning Pokestops, battling with each other, trading Pokemon with each other. I'm still on some Facebook groups where people are like, hey, I'm going to do this raid. Does anybody want to come with me and do this? Like, that game came out 3 years ago and it's still going strong. Like, it's crazy. Like, we almost have the entire Pokédex at our fingers now. And I remember when it came out, like, that game just was everywhere. I remember people running through state parks and stuff like that, trying to go and catch, like, Vaporeons or, like, Kadabras or stuff like that. And it was just weird that, like, people were outside having fun. It's just mind-blowing.
Oh, absolutely. The social experience of Pokemon Go cannot be understated. I remember the week it came out, I was on vacation in New England with some family, and any of like the stops that we went to on our little road trip, I would see people out and about, either like on their own or just in random groups of friends and even strangers connecting. I was in this park in Connecticut, and I heard a bunch of people running around talking about, yo, Team Valor, what up? So I can't remember the last time that like I saw a game that not only brought friends together, but complete strangers. I mean, outside of maybe a convention, you know, you don't get that. And that's something really special about Pokemon Go, is that it tapped into what the real potential of that series was for bringing gamers together.
Yeah, and we all know that Team Instinct's better than Team Valor.
Well, I mean, you know, if you've never interacted with another human being in your whole life and Instinct's all you got, like, sure, you know, but when you're looking for that true global experience.
Okay, come on, hold on. We all know Zapdos is better than Moltres.
I mean, Zapdos.
You're gonna tell me that Flareon's better than Jolteon?
Well, no, but Zapdos is an electric flying type, so Zapdos should theoretically be like hurting itself every time it does anything. You know, like it's a complete Frankenstein contradiction. Now, Moltres, that's this beautiful phoenix that can bring fire and wrath down on anybody who challenges it. That is a bird to get behind.
Yeah, because it works so well in X-Men 3.
Wait, we don't talk about that here. But hey, how about this? I'm sure we can both agree that at least it's not Articuno.
That is true. Yeah, nobody wants Articuno. With that Articuno hate, hit me with your number 5.
So, Josh, my number 5 is a game that, funnily enough, you thought was my favorite game of all time. And while it doesn't quite get there, it is a game that I think is very special, and that is BioShock Infinite. So BioShock Infinite is another fantastic dive into a unique and original dystopian nightmare world from Irrational Games. This one takes us on a creepy and intense journey through what like the worst of America can be when we kind of forget how to treat our fellow Americans. And through the story, we interact with what I think is one of the best player characters of all time, Booker DeWitt, and who is one of the best companion characters of all time, Elizabeth. And their connection and their journey together is like touching and thrilling, and you like really begin to care for them. And as this larger mystery kind of like blossoms around them, it really makes you think about choice and destiny, and maybe even just some concepts of like the universe that we live in. It builds up to this like really shocking twist that I still think about today. It's like written so well that it just flows up to this moment, and you're like, oh, of course, it all built to this, and it all makes sense. The only begrudging little knock I'll say against it, because I have to be, you know, as honest as I can here, is that it suffers a little bit in its first-person shooter combat. The areas are just a bit too big and open for precise first-person combat, but moments when it works, like when you're zooming across those sky rails or just landing perfect melee combos, like moments like that make it really click. And just overall, I think it's something where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and BioShock Infinite ends up being something very unique.
Yeah, and that's something that happens in a lot of games, though, where you just kind of starts to get stale after a little bit once you like kind of hit like that plateau until you start getting like newer weapons or like bigger upgrades or something like that. But I will say that the charm of the city of Columbia is just beautiful for how creepy it is, but at the same time, like, so nice. It's just it always lets you like, it's like there's something uneasy about it, but at the same time, like, charming.
No, I get what you mean. Like, it constantly invites you in to explore every part of it, even as you find that more and more of it is built upon, like, all these horrific lies and these horrific, you know, injustices. It's a game world that you just don't want to walk away from, and you're so eager to find out what's around the next corner. So, yeah. A game that very much has its story and its aesthetics down so tight that it carries the whole experience, you know?
Yeah.
Bounce it back to you, Josh. What do you got at number four?
So number four is a game where I always had the question, can I do that? And saying, oh shit, I can do that. Or can I climb up there? Oh shit, I can actually climb up that. Or can I go here? Or what if I do this? And that game is Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. A game where you can just do anything from the beginning of the game. You can go right to the end if you wanted, but you don't need to. The game that people still to this day are finding new and exciting and alternative ways to just traverse the land. Like, stuff that you would never even think of that, like, people are doing. It's crazy. And it's one of those games where I just remember staying up late one night. And my wife went to bed at, like, 10 o'clock at night. And I'm sitting there playing. And next thing I know, she's coming out of the bedroom and she's like, well, are you still playing the game? I'm like, yeah, why? She's like, because it's like 6:30 in the morning. And I said, oh, crap. Like, she's like, what have you been doing? I'm like, nothing. And I've just been walking and just exploring the world. And it took the idea of Zelda, of the dungeons and going to get these pieces here and then get the pieces of the Triforce. And then you go and do this and then you fight Ganon at the end. It completely turned it on its side, like with the introductions of the shrines and all the other ways that you can level up your character now in the game. It's just added so much more. It added a breath of fresh air to a franchise that I think kind of needed it.
You know, I agree with you completely. And it's funny that line, the breath of fresh air, kind of got beaten to death in the gaming press when Breath of the Wild came out. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like, a cliched statement is just the perfect way to sum up a game. It resuscitated the Zelda franchise in just the most exciting way. I'm going to just kind of put a pin in this because, spoiler alert, we might be talking about Breath of the Wild a little more later. But, yeah, everything you said just is on point, in my opinion.
Well, I'm glad that we're on the same track then. With that, give me your number three or number four. Number four.
Sure. Hey, Josh, yeah. One at a time. I know you're excited, but
I just want to get to the end.
I know. It's fine. All right. No worries. Number four is a game that I'm probably going to catch a lot of flack for saying what I'm about to say, but this is a game that I think saved its own franchise. What I mean is, this is a franchise that had kind of entered a holding pattern of, you know, resting on its laurels, not trying that many things new, just banking on its iconic status.
Wait. And can I guess? Can I guess what it is?
Sure. Yeah. What tired franchise do you think had kind of run its course up through 2017?
Oh, up through 2017. I thought you were going to say up to 2019.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm going to say WWE 2K20.
Well, no, unfortunately, it was not that masterpiece. No, surprisingly, it was Super Mario Odyssey, a game that brought the excitement of exploration and a whole new sense of gameplay to the Mario franchise. Now, let me just clarify, maybe I'm cursed with some bias here, but my first console was an N64, and my first proper Mario experience was Mario 64. I loved it very much, and I was kind of introduced to Mario in 3D. Now, do I love the 2D Mario games? Yes, of course I do. I think Super Mario Bros. 2 is the best incarnation of the side-scrolling Mario games, followed closely by Mario World and the SNES. They're all good. Like, there is no such thing as a bad Mario game. It's just from the Wii years up till about 2017 when this was released, we were just stuck with New Super Mario Brothers and all of its kind of, you know, continuations of New Super Mario Brothers U, New Super Mario Brothers DS, blah, 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 blah. And it was just the same thing over and over again. Like, sure, I'm not saying they weren't well designed, but I got so bored of the linear levels and the repetitive side-scrolling platforming. I wanted something where I was a bit more free to explore and free to do my own thing. And that was an itch that, like, Super Mario 3D Land and World never scratched. But Odyssey drops you into these big, gorgeous open levels and says, go about them at your will. There is a bit of, like, some linear paths in each world, like, related to story functions, you know, like, oh, welcome to New Donk City, save us from Bowser's machinations before the whole city opens up. Fine, granted, that's linear. But, like, when the worlds are truly yours to explore, and you can go anywhere and meet these cute new characters, or find moons in unexpected places, or try these challenges at will, that's like the Mario feeling I truly love the most, is just the sense of discovery and trying things out and seeing if they work. And when they pay off, it's exhilarating. And when they don't, it just encourages you to, you know, get up and try again somewhere else. And it's filled with great music and these breathtaking moments of joy that I will probably never forget. And for me right now, it's up there in like a top three of the whole Mario franchise. And that's why I think Odyssey is one of the best games of this decade.
Well, first off, Super Mario World is the best Super Mario Brothers game.
It's up there.
It's there. It is. I understand your love for Odyssey. I understand a lot of people's love for Odyssey. I played it. I beat it. It was a fun game. I'm not a huge fan of the 3D Mario games, but I respect your number four.
That was the most, like, intense respect. It's almost like I'm prepping myself for a heel turn or something. Like, I'm going to turn around. You're going to beat me down. All right, Josh. Well, since there's this air of tension underneath it, why don't we move things along to number three? Let's change the subject.
So number three, I'm going to surprise a lot of people when I say this. Number three is a sports game. But
are you okay?
Oh, I'm going to say number three is a sports game that's also a racing game, that's also a soccer game, that's also a basketball game, that's also a hockey game, that's also Rocket League. It is the best combination of, like, things that I never knew I needed in my life. I remember, you know, it was kind of a time where we didn't really have a Smash Brothers game, like, that was super current. You know what I mean? We had Smash for the Wii U, and yeah, that was all right. But, like, we were kind of in, like, this weird limbo stage right now where we didn't have anything to kind of, like, hold us over until Ultimate came out. And Rocket League took over the, you know, one more match. Mentality, where I own it on the PlayStation 4, I own it on the Xbox One, I own it for the Switch, just because, you know, I'm out and about, I'll play Rocket League while I'm out and about on my Switch, or hey, like, you guys want to, like, sit down and play a game or two of Rocket League, because, like, 4 minutes goes by so fast in that game that it's just one more match, and then you realize 4 hours later you're still one more matching it. I love that game. I've put thousands of matches in across all those platforms, and I've probably put hundreds of hours into that game, and I still go back to it to this day because it's the best sports game ever made.
Rocket League is indeed a lot of fun, and you want to talk about unprecedented moments with games. Rocket League is the game that made me totally fine with paying for microtransactions, because, you know, in the past it was like, you think you're going to get me to pay for cosmetics? Fat chance. And then Rocket League is like, do you want your car to be the Jurassic Park Jeep? And I was like, shut up and take my money.
Do you want to be the Batmobile?
Take it. Do you want it all?
Do you want to have the Ecto-1? Do you want to have the DeLorean?
I'm opening a credit card. No, for real, though, Rocket League is very, very fun and easy to get into, and I think it's that degree of just, like, ease of access that has opened it up to so many people. Like, when you see yourself doing it. It feels so fun and awesome when you see pros doing it. It like gets the adrenaline pumping. But overall, it's just like it's one of the easiest games to just have fun with. And I really admire it for that. I agree with you.
Yeah. Rocket League is probably the only esports that I'll watch just because it's like watching like real sports. And when the Rocket League championships come out every year, like I'm always like, oh, my God, I got to watch this. Like, because it's just so crazy knowing that how bad I apparently am at the game.
You got your drink hat on and your big foam fingers. And you're like, let's go! Oy, oy, oy.
It's just so crazy, though, too. Like when Rocket League was released, it was released for the PlayStation 4 first, and it was released for free.
It was like a proto Fortnite or something.
Yeah, it was released for free for everyone to play. And I came in a month afterwards, so I had to buy the game outright. And I was not upset about paying $20 to own that game.
But I think that was actually, maybe that was actually the genius of that marketing move is, you know, like it's like a drug, give everybody a little bit for free. And then the word of mouth is going to spread.
Yeah.
And then they'll want to pay, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Economics.
Tell me about your number three, though, Tom. Is it the best sports game ever made?
No. My number three is, in fact, an indie title that I think kind of rewrites the book on the entire genre it takes place in. This is a Metroidvania that just swerved all my expectations of what a Metroidvania could be. And that game is Hollow Knight. This is a game that is an indie labor of love, yet has more polish and finesse than most AAA titles I see. Gorgeous worlds, thrilling combat, incredibly beautiful aesthetics and atmosphere. Like, this is a world that is just a joy to explore and get lost in. You meet so many intriguing and cute little bug characters as you're going through these underground kingdoms. You get into some of the most satisfying boss fights ever, where you'll get your ass kicked a lot of times, but the more you pay attention and the more you refine your approach to the combat, when you win, you feel so great. You know, it's a true achievement. And even just like in the small moments, it's breathtaking. There is a moment when you come across this, you know, nearly abandoned underground city that's just drenched in rainfall, and there are these little benches that you can sit on to save your game. And I sat on a bench next to an NPC, and I just put the controller down, and my character and the NPC just sat watching the rain fall outside this big glass window. And as the soundtrack played and everything just kind of flowed, I was just like, this is truly beautiful. This is more than just a game. This is kind of like an experience, a moment. And it's something I'm going to probably think about forever. Hollow Knight is just a true gem. You want to talk about characters humming like great songs in that game? My favorite is the little pill bug in like the Crystal Mines, who in a tragically adorable way is kind of like lost all sense of doing anything but manual labor, and they're trying to dig a tunnel, and they're like, yummy, yummy. And like, every time you go and talk to them, they're just like, do you want to help me out? And I'm always like, nope. And I walk away. I'm like, you keep singing for me, please. Oh, it's great.
Yeah. I remember picking up Hollow Knight on sale the one time on the eShop. And it was one of those games, like, I started playing it, and I was like, ah, this is cool. I know everyone's saying, like, oh, it's an indie version of Dark Souls. Like, yeah, I kind of get the idea behind it. But, like, playing it, I was like, oh, that was fun for a little bit. I was like, I don't know too much of the story that's going on. Like, it's very vague at points. And I stopped playing it. And then the next day, I'm like, wait, I could have done this. I could have did this. And, like, I kept thinking about the game when I wasn't playing it or when I didn't want to play it. And I was like, man, I got to go back and keep playing this. And then, like, I put a lot of time into it. I went through and got all of the little caterpillar babies.
The grubs. Oh, again, we're talking about, like, cute characters in this dark, grim world. Yeah, anytime I saw them and heard their cries, I was like, I've got to save you because you're my new best friend, you know?
Yeah.
Like before Baby Yoda, they were Baby Yoda.
Yeah, I unlocked 100% of the map, and I was like, just going and zooming out and seeing how big that map is, you're just like, oh my God. Like, it's huge. Like, it is definitely worth, like, I would say it'd be worth like $40. I'm just saying. It'd be worth $40.
Hey, I don't want to get on too much of a tangent, but I want to ask you an interesting question. You know, we're on the way out of a decade, so I want to see if maybe we have to possibly retire something. So, okay. I saw this interesting argument on Twitter the other day that we really should retire the phrase Metroidvania, because it doesn't fairly represent that this kind of genre anymore. Like, even though I just gushed about it, it's kind of like someone comically made a point that, like, we don't call all shooters Doomquakes just because, you know, those were two of the biggest early ones, you know? It's like the genre has kind of evolved past that, and even though they encompass a lot of the same ideas that Metroid and Castlevania made popular, I just saw this argument that, like, it's not fair to keep calling them that or something, because it kind of makes it seem like those are the only two good ones or something. What do you think? I'm just curious what you thought about that.
They're not the only two good ones. Those are the only two really big standout ones. When, you know, mm-hmm. You said about Doomquakers. You know what I mean? Right? No, we call those first person shooters because there's a plethora of those that are fantastic. We don't talk about sports games. We go, oh, those Maddeners. You know what I mean? Like, there's NHL games. There's The Show. There's wrestling games. You know what I mean? Like, you don't just call them just, oh, because Madden is the top selling sports game, or FIFA's, you know, is the top selling sports game of every year. We don't just call them the footballers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think these are the two big standouts. They're the ones that kind of originated that. But I'm sorry. Like, I played through Jedi Fallen Order. That's a Metroidvania.
Oh, you know, that's true. And, you know, I've heard more of like, oh, this is like a Dark Souls-like game than I have heard Metroidvania.
I will say it is.
Right. But you are the more I do think about what I have played in Fallen Order, yes, there are Metroidvania elements to it of coming back once you've unlocked new things, you know.
Yeah, I need to get this power up so I can get behind this door. Okay. Like, I think it's an honor to be called a Metroidvania, but the thing is too, like, the only reason Vania is included with that is because of Symphony of the Night. I think, like, the original Castlevanias, yes, they were some there was some exploration in them and stuff like that, but like, I think when you think of games like that, you really think of like Super Metroid. You don't think like 5 years ahead when you go to, I think it was 5 years ahead, but you don't jump 5 years ahead. I think it's 5 years ahead, but you don't like jump all the way up to Symphony of the Night when you think of Castlevania game. Oh, I don't think, but I know everyone's like gushes over Symphony of the Night, but.
Right. I get you.
You know, there was like eight Castlevania games prior to Symphony of the Night. And most of those were side scrolling platformers. You know what I mean? None of them, like, there was like two or three that were the exploration side of them. So yeah.
I get you completely. Yeah, just maybe as we're entering a new decade, we kind of have to like open up how we define the games we love. So, yeah, fun little talk I just wanted to have with you. But now that we've gone over that, Josh, I think you owe me a number three.
Oh. I owe you a number two, to be precise.
Oh, of course.
And number two, I remember recording this 4 days ago, and for people listening, Tom lost his mind when I revealed my number two, because it's a game that finally completed its story about a week ago, and it's a game that I've talked about a lot and I've put a lot of hours into, and a game that I went ahead and called my favorite game of all time for an awfully long time, and that is Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight makes number two mark very, very close. It was by a hair, man. But Shovel Knight is a game that I will constantly keep going back to. I have like five or six save spots on my Switch with characters that I have in Shovel Knight, all the DLC ones that are completely free if you buy the Treasure Trove. I own it on the Xbox where you got the Battletoads level. I own it for the PS4 where you can play against Kratos inside the game. I own it for the Wii U. I own it for the Vita. I own it for the 3DS, which is the first system it came out for. I own it on the PC. Yes, I own PC games. Shovel Knight is 2D platforming at its best. Do you like Mega Man? Do you like DuckTales? Do you like Mario 3? Do you like a great story? Do you like downloadable content that is the length of an actual game itself, like it used to be back in the day? Shovel Knight is 2D platforming perfection.
Yes, my original reaction to this was truly shocked, because I expected Shovel Knight to be on there, and I expected it to be number one. And when it was at number two, it rocked my world, you know? It was like a family member ripping their face off and turning out to be another person. But as the episode progressed, I did come to realize what was his number one and why. But Shovel Knight, the little bit of it I have played through you, I find delightful. I have it, and I have yet to get to it, but I'm always, like, whenever I see it on my to-do list, it's like, I know I'm going to have a lot of fun with that. Because the brief things of it that I did touch, it was great. But I know the impact it's had on your life, and everything about it looks very inventive and charming, and yeah, I think it's a very interesting addition to your list.
Yeah, and you know what's even better, Tom? Like, it has co-op mode, so, like, we could play together if we would ever just actually visit each other. No.
Oh, yeah, you're too far. Never mind. Never.
Yeah, Shovel Knight, I mean, if you've played Shovel Knight, you know, like, what you're getting, and the experience to it. It's just delightful and wonderful, and a great story about love, war, and chivalry.
The pillars of all ancient societies, of course.
So, Tom, hit me with your number two.
Well, Josh, as they say, it takes two to make things all right. And my number two, in a little bit of a cheat, is in fact two games, but they're two games that, when combined, tell one epic story, and that is Red Dead Redemption 1 and 2. The reason I had to bundle these games together is because I just feel like, in terms of all the series that we saw throughout this decade, this is probably one of the most complete ones, in that both of its entries serve each other in terms of story and narrative. And even though, like, you know, the second one is a prequel, they show off this evolution of gameplay and game design that I think is endlessly fascinating. And it's a game world that I got lost in on both occasions for months, and I very rarely wanted to come out of it. Story-wise, it's this saga of how America was on the verge of change, but with change comes a lot of hardship and sacrifice, and through its main characters, John Marston and Arthur Morgan, we see that hardship and sacrifice, and it's just two of the most engaging, tragic narratives I've ever seen. And the gameplay-wise, it's this big, rich, open world that you can go get lost in, have really interesting side quests, discover really cool secrets. And overall, it's just this, like, delight that bled out into my personal life. You know, the friends that I had who, you know, clicked with it and who also enjoyed it, I could have these hours-long conversations about, like, you got lost in what woods and you found what there? You know, like, I truly think they're games that, like, no two people can approach in the same way, and that will lead to a lot of really great storytelling and just personal experiences. So, yeah, Red Dead 1 and Red Dead 2 combined are my second favorite game of the decade, because they are just this complete experience.
I will give Red Dead 1 the award of this decade for the game that I've purchased the most and traded in the most. I own this game so many damn times, because I'm like, you know what? I keep hearing so many good things about it. I just got to do it. I just got to sit down. I got to bite the bullet. And it's like, we gotta go ride horses and go ahead and get them cattle and go ahead and shoot this person in Max Payne style mode. And I'm like, this isn't fun. You remember that game Enter the Matrix? Well, that's this with cowboys.
See, I would hard disagree on that, but I understand if you didn't gel with it, I won't fault you. But no, I don't personally think that a lot of its gameplay elements were distractions for me. But, you know, it's each their own.
You know, Tom, sometimes they just say Red Dead Redemption is Grand Theft Auto with horses.
False. You know, I'm just going to say, I don't even consider Grand Theft Auto to be Rockstar's marquee franchise anymore. In my opinion, Grand Theft Auto is just Red Dead Redemption with cars. I think you need to giddy up and get me on to number one.
Oh, we got one last ride.
One last ride, boy.
I got a plan. My number one is a game about a mountain. It's a game that, like, really hit hit like close to home when playing through, just seeing the struggles of somebody with mental illness. And, you know, when you start the game up and the first screen pops up and it just says, you can do this. Meaning no matter how hard this game's about to get, like, don't give up. And, you know, you reach the one part of this game and it's there's a monument and it says, this memorial is dedicated to all who perished on the climb. And it's not only talking about people, you know, who've died in the game, but people who have lost the battle with mental illness. And that game is Celeste. Celeste is probably one of the most emotional games I've played. Just going through and just, you know, seeing Madeline's struggles with issues with anxiety and depression and fighting with the darker side of herself and seeing the alternative side of the world. It is something that kind of just came out of nowhere. You know, I remember sitting at work the one day and everyone's blowing up the internet because this indie game received a perfect 10 on IGN. What indie game would ever receive a perfect score? And I was like, that doesn't make sense. And I listened to the review and I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. And I started playing it. And like from like maybe the first like half an hour to an hour into the game, I was like, whoa, like there's something more here. Like the game just started progressively getting heavier and heavier in its actual tone. And after beating it and realizing like the climb that she had towards the end, like you're so close and you notice that the numbers are getting smaller and smaller as you're reaching your way up to the top of this mountain. And you're like, oh man, I'm so close. I can do this. I'm unstoppable. I can do this. No matter how difficult each level's getting, you know that like you've made it through all of the trouble. Like you've made it through all the hardship. You've made it through everything. Like now, you know, you've got this. And Celeste is a game that I think surprised not only me, but a lot of people in this world. And I've gone through and I've played it several times since then. And every time I'm noticing like, oh, this little thing or this little piece of dialogue here, or, you know, I collected all these pieces here. So people are actually, you know, treating me different in the real world now. Oh, not in the real. So people are treating me different in the overworld and stuff like that in the game. And it's just a really awesome experience. And this, I think the past couple of years have been great for, have had a lot of great games that tackled mental health with Celeste and Hellblade. And I think it's the pinnacle of being able to show people a different side of a very serious topic.
As with a few other games on your list, I have not gotten to directly experience Celeste yet, but I have, as you said, seen the impact this has had in the gaming community in terms of giving people who have suffered through mental illness a chance to kind of breathe and express the highs and lows of their struggle with, like, through just, like, you know, like you said, the climb. The soundtrack, which I have gotten to interact with, is beautiful, and I think it's one of the finest pieces of music and gaming of this decade. I also agree with, you know, the remarkable reception and how surprising that was, because, you know, indie games don't have the kind of money necessary to pay off IGN to give them a 10 out of 10. So the fact that Celeste did it is quite a testament, you know, because IGN, they demand a lot of money for perfect scores.
We even look at the Game Awards in 2018, like they won for best indie game and they were up against a lot of good games that year, too. It just proves that how many people believed in a game so simple yet so heavy.
Mm-hmm. And a game that, like, essentially hit on a lot of emotional truths that people just needed in their lives, you know?
Yeah.
When you connect with people on that kind of level, you do make an impact. And I've seen that from Celeste without even directly experiencing it. So I can tell that, yeah, this truly is a special game.
Yeah. So I know that was a little bit of a heavy topic there for my last one. So, Tom, let's try to lighten it up a little bit. What's your number one?
Oh, well, this game is actually about mental illness and starving children in Africa and global warming. And no, I'm just kidding. It's not that this game isn't important or deep, because I think it is. But it's a game that you've already mentioned, and it is a game that, for me, was incredible because it rewrote the book on an entire genre, and also for me changed expectations that I have for games, and that is The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. This is a game that, you know, we have worn out praising in the last 3 years, but, you know, all that praise is still very well earned. This has changed the Zelda franchise. This has changed open world games. And it's just because it works so well and it's so damn fun. Being able to just chart out in any direction, you know, just as I said with Mario Odyssey, I mean for Zelda, it renewed this sense of exploration and discovery and all the rewards you get out of doing that. You know, I could gush, but I don't think I'm going to hit too many points that other people haven't said. You know, beautiful soundtrack, very fun world to explore, unique enemies, very interesting original characters, gorgeous landscapes, you know. But for me, it extends even further past that. You know, something I said in my criteria is, like, did a game that I picked have an impact that bled out into the greater industry? You know, Zelda has kind of made me have almost no tolerance for anything that doesn't do what it did. So a game I played this decade, which I very much enjoyed, was Final Fantasy XV, and it came out about a year before Breath of the Wild did. And, you know, I'm running around the big open world of Final Fantasy XV, and then I come upon this, like, 4-foot obstruction, you know, like this ledge that's not even taller than your character, and you can't jump up, you can't jump over it, you can't climb over it. You have to, like, find this big, stupid path around the obstacle. And I just remember, because I played this game after Breath of the Wild, sitting there and being like, this is unacceptable. Like, I refuse to take this as something I have to deal with. And, you know, I've had a real time separating, you know, like, hey, let it go and appreciate it for what the game itself is trying to do. And I'm like, but I can't let it go, because Breath of the Wild showed that, like, you can re-examine exploration in this new light of making these areas explorable. So yeah, it's a new bar for what I expect out of open world adventure games, and it's something that I'm very excited to see how it makes the industry evolve. I will not be surprised if across the next 3 years we see a lot more open world games get released whose developers were all like, I went all in on Breath of the Wild because of what I saw this game do. And yeah, it's a game that is going to reshape the future, and I cannot wait to see what it brings.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the last big 3D Zelda game that we had was Skyward Sword.
Very limiting, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, other than that, we had a bunch of 2D Zelda games come out, which were fantastic. You know, Link Between Worlds is one of my favorite Zelda games released. But, yeah, I mean, I think once the hype for this was very unnerving. Because we were supposed to get it way before we actually did. And it finally came out. We were promised for the Wii U. We got it on the Switch on day one. I think it delivered as what a launch title should do, to show you what you can do with not only a console, but what you can do with video games. That was completely unheard of. It was, I said earlier, it's a breath of fresh air. Yeah, it's a joke. Ha ha ha, it's a pun. But at the same time, though, like, it did so many things that you could only dream that you could do in games.
Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
Every piece of ingredient that you got, let's just try to cook something with it. Mm-hmm. Like,
you see a mountain? Like, I wonder if I can climb that.
Yeah.
Boom, you can. You can, you know?
What's this island all the way over here not on the map? Oh, wait.
Oh,
I can go to that?
What? You know? It's not just decoration. It's actually there.
Yeah, I think Breath of the Wild is just a game that impacted, you know, the industry so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very inspiring game. So I know we talked about the games that honorable mentions, and we talked about our top five games of the decade. What are some games that from this past decade that you have not yet played that you want to dip your toes into?
Well, Josh, for me, like I said, there's a couple that you mentioned. I have an endless amount of indie games that I just have missed out, and I greatly regret that. But so many interesting things from not just Celeste and Shovel Knight, but Papers, Please, Baba Is You. You know, it's funny, I just said there's so many of them, and now I can only name two. But it's just, that's what I mean. We saw so many independent creators pump out these unexpected masterworks this decade. And it was really hard to keep up with all of them because so many would dominate the moment. It's like, one second, you think you're up on the gaming culture, and then boom, Untitled Goose Game unleashes this storm of memes. And then it's like, oh, I got to get up on that. And then boom, something else is out. You know, pay attention to it. I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It's very good that we have so much good content coming our way. But sometimes it can get a little overwhelming. Yeah. Beyond that, I would just say the big thing I missed was another PlayStation generation. You know, this is the second generation in a row. Either just through money or timing, I did not purchase a PS4. And so I have missed most of the exclusives. I hope to change that one day, but, you know, I still have not gotten to play The Last of Us or the God of War reboot. I played about an hour and a half of Horizon Zero Dawn at my friend Mike's house, and I very much enjoyed that. Would absolutely love to finish it whenever I can. Those are my big, you know, like, missed marks, I guess you would say. But how about you, Josh?
Only a couple games, really, that I'm like, oh, I just really want to play it because I've heard so much about it. Or these are games that a lot of people have fallen in love with over the years and stuff like that. Oxenfree, which is apparently a great story-driven indie game. Night in the Woods is apparently another great indie game that I've missed out on. I have it downloaded. I just haven't gotten to it yet because everything just constantly keeps coming out. Ni No Kuni for now, it's out on everything. It wasn't a PS3 game, but now it's out on everything. I heard it's pretty much like a PlayStation's version of Pokemon, but now I can play it on the Switch, so I'm good with that, so I'll play it on the Switch. And Persona 4 Golden, the game for the Vita that everyone's saying is one of the best RPGs. It's up there with like Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy 3 and 7. Like, people are saying, like, this is one of the best RPGs ever made. And I'm like, is it? I'll be the judge of that. That's really, like, it on my short list. I have a bunch of games that, like, I'm just going, oh, I'm going to try that. Like, Owlboy, A Hat in Time.
Oh,
like,
oh yes. Like, see, again, yes, you're right.
These are a lot of games, though, that, like, I'm told, like, oh, yeah, you got to try this. Like, you're going to love it. The style of games that you play, this is right up your alley.
I really feel kind of, when we're talking about the indie scene, it's a lot like how there's too many TV shows thanks to streaming, you know? Like, we're not just at peak TV, we're at peak indie game. And the way that, you know, a game could come out independently on any platform at any time, it's kind of like you have to be on the alert. It's like, what's coming? You have to set alarms and ring bells. So yeah, it can be difficult to keep up with stuff, but it's a habit I hope to improve on in the next decade.
Yeah, I know we are currently finishing up on 2019 right now, so look for a review of 2019 coming your way. But I think other than that, I think we can safely say that the best game of the decade really was Flappy Birds. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.